This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, it's Wednesday, 25th of March, and this is CoronaCast, a daily podcast that's all about answering your questions about coronavirus. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan.
So, Norman, there's been a lot of talk recently about people not taking the pandemic seriously, and people are interested to talk about how to talk about it with the people in their life who are still wandering around too much. Do you have any tips on how to convince that person who just doesn't want to seem to get the message yet?
Well, it depends who they are. It will probably more often than not, but this is, you know, prejudice coming in here, being a younger person who feels that they're invincible and they'll just go out and get it and they'll be over it. And after all, they'll say, isn't it just like, you know, the flu? And so here's the argument. One is that, yep, it's true that younger people are not as likely as older people to die from it, but there are plenty of younger people who do die from it. So if you think that you're steel belted, you're actually not. 30 to 40% of intensive care unit beds are taken up with people who are relatively young, and some of them die. And there are no known risk factors for why those people die, because it's not like elderly people with heart disease and diabetes and so on. They've got no other particular risk factors. So you are actually playing Russian roulette by going out and doing it. And the second reason you need to actually be serious about this is, do you have family? So parents and grandparents. You are contributing to the spread into the community, and it actually could kill them. And then the third thing I'm saying to people is, when you were at school, did you have friends that went on to do nursing? Did you have friends who went on to do medicine or work in healthcare, their physios and so on? Because if this gets out of control, they will actually die, because 20% of people, of healthcare professionals, will get this. They'll get a big dose and many will get it severely. And there are doctors and nurses dying of this. Is that what you want? You know, and if that isn't enough to convince people, then I think there's something wrong with them.
So do it for yourself, but also do it for the people around you, people that you love.
That's right, because it's not guaranteed you're going to get a mild dose of it.
So David's asking if we can clarify what the difference is between COVID-19 and SARS-CoV-2.
SARS-CoV-2, I know it's confusing. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that causes COVID-19. So COVID-19 is the disease. So flu-like symptoms, runny nose, fatigue, loss of taste, loss of smell, sometimes diarrhea. That combination of symptoms is the disease. And the disease can go for a week and then you get better, or it can go for a week and then after a week you fall off the cliff and you get really seriously ill. That's COVID-19. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that causes it. And it's called SARS-CoV-2 because it's the second version of a related virus to SARS, which affected people about 15 or more years ago in various countries of the world. So it's kind of the second version of the SARS virus. It's not really the SARS virus, but it's a second version. People say it's the coronavirus. Really what they should be saying, it's SARS-CoV-2. And the reason why you separate out the two is that some people are infected with SARS-CoV-2 and either have very, very mild symptoms, so mild they don't know they've got it, or they're totally asymptomatic. And 60% of infections of SARS-CoV-2, which leads to COVID-19, are from people who are asymptomatic or have got very minor symptoms, and therefore they don't know they're spreading it around.
So speaking of spreading it, we're also getting a lot of questions about testing and testing kits. And people are asking, why can't we, being Australia, just manufacture our own testing kits if there's a shortage?
There are labs that can produce the reagents, and which are the chemicals you need to analyse the genes on the virus. So we do have those reagents around and we can manufacture, but we don't have many facilities left in Australia which actually can do that. So over the years, we've lost industries in Australia which have the tooling which allows you to produce these kits at mass scale. So we can produce the kits, but not in the quantities that's required, which is why we're having to import them. But we do have some machines around which can actually do this sort of testing en masse. They're taken up with other work, but we do have those machines too. So we would have to, you know, create a manufacturing facility with all the controls there that we just don't have at the moment.
So that's some questions from grown-ups, but we're also getting heaps of questions from kids, and we've covered a few over the last few episodes, but let's keep doing that. Clara has sent this in from isolation at home. She and her family have cold symptoms and they don't want to make other people sick.
Hello, my name is Clara and I live in Adelaide. I'm 5. I would like to know, why is coronavirus so bad?
Look, it's a really good question, Clara. And the reason it's so bad is that, first of all, it's very contagious. And by contagious, we mean how many people it spreads to. So if I've got the infection, or let's say you had it, Clara, how many people could you infect around you? And on average, you infect two or three people once for the time that you've got the virus. And that's actually quite a lot. So if you've got the flu, it's under two, it's maybe one and a half people. But if it was a pretty mild infection, then you wouldn't worry too much. And 80% of people, 8 out of 10 people, it is actually fairly mild. But in 20% of people, it gets severe. And that's because it locks into a receptor in your lung. That's a lock and key mechanism in your lung, and can create a really bad lung disease. So it's not so much a lung infection as your whole lung reacts and almost goes solid, and you lose the ability to take air from the atmosphere, breathe it in, and get oxygen going to your bloodstream. And that's why people die of this.
We hope you feel better soon, Clara. We've also got a question from 6-year-old Ezra.
If you get coronavirus when you already have a different virus, what will happen? Will it mix or something else?
That's a really good question, Ezra. Really clever question. At the moment, we don't really know. But if you were to get influenza, if you were to get the flu at the same time as COVID-19, that's the disease caused by the virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, then the likelihood is that they'll add or multiply together and damage your lungs and damage your body much more than each would individually, and maybe much more than each would. So it's not multiplying by two, the effects. It could be multiplying by 4 or 6, because they work with each other to actually make your body worse. That's if you get the influenza or, say, the common cold. It just could make everything much worse. With other things like, say, for example, if you've got cancer or diabetes and so on, it usually means that your immune system, your ability to fight this off, is weakened. So you're more likely to get the infection and more likely to not be able to resist it very well. And so your body, if you like, is distracted because it's taken up by fighting the cancer or fighting the diabetes. Then your body is distracted and you're more vulnerable, more open to the infection. I hope that explains it in language that communicates it clearly, Ezra, but really good question.
So research groups all over the world are looking for different ways to treat and cure COVID-19. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, has just launched a mega trial of 4 of the most promising coronavirus treatments. Norman, what are they testing?
So they're testing a variety of drugs. So they're testing this anti-malarial called chloroquine and a related drug called hydroxychloroquine, which may be a little bit stronger. They're looking at HIV drugs, which are antiretroviral drugs. One's lopinavir and ritonavir. There has been some disappointing results, I think, from those two, but they're going to have a look at them as well. And maybe add an immune stimulant called interferon beta, which helps to attack viruses. So that, in other words, you might get 3 drugs working together, which might affect the immune system and allow the immune system to attack the virus. Interferon beta has got some nasty side effects, which would be a problem, so you have to monitor it. And then there's this other drug called remdesivir, which is a recent drug produced by a drug company called Gilead for another purpose, for another virus. And they're going to try that because they think they might get an effect with the SARS-CoV-2. So what they're going to do, it's not a randomized controlled trial. They're going to allocate people to one or other of the drugs or usual care or the drug combinations, register them as a trial and watch what happens to them as they go through. So that it's not going to be a perfect trial, but we don't have time for a perfect trial. We've just got to be able to get people on these study drugs. We know on average what percentage goes on to develop serious disease and need to be ventilated, and we know roughly what percentage will go on to die, and can we divert from that? And then we'll do comparisons between the different drug groups.
How do they know that these drugs are ones that might work?
They don't really. So some of it is a bit theoretical, but there have been some small pilot studies which suggests that there may be an effect of the anti-malarial. They're not very good studies, but they're not good enough to say to everybody, let's get on to chloroquine. And there are side effects from these drugs as well. So you don't want to recommend them because it distracts from what might be the cure, and you don't want a real mess out there. So you really want to know, divide it all up. There's some indications from small studies uncontrolled studies, relatively uncontrolled studies, that these drugs may have an effect. And now what we've got to do is scale up the trial and see, when you compare them in a reasonably scientific way, which ones stand out, if any, because none may, but we've got to get on and find out.
Well, that's it for CoronaCast today, but we'll be back tomorrow, same place. So don't forget to rate, review and subscribe.
So we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.